It's Friday, December 3rd, nearing the end of 2010. Here in Oroville, listen to the news. An interview with Leslie, some announcements, and a weather report. The sky is overcast. There's a chance of a thunderstorm. Temperature range 25 to 28 degrees. Winds northeasterly 25 to 28 kilometers. Following now, hear an interview in the coffee shop with Leslie. She's been a visitor to Oroville many times over the years during her work, which takes her to every corner in India.
I love it, and I've, you know, always been very engaged with Oroville and with lots of people here. So actually, I've sort of I'm using it now at the moment as a base point for research I'm doing in Tamil Nadu. And one of the reasons I did shift my field work down here that I'm doing for a thesis is so that I could reconnect in with Oroville and travel around Tamil Nadu, but have this wonderful, you know, supportive and loving base to come back to.
What's your thesis on?
Well, I'm looking at popular practices in shrines and, well, women's faith healing practices in shrines here in India, and how they've been affected by government directives to bring these shrines, very popular for healing, under the Mental Health Act. So what happened was almost 10 years ago in Tamil Nadu, at a shrine down in the south, there was a fire and 30 people burnt to death. Now what happened, this was a place where a lot of people went to cure themselves of health problems and mental health problems. And families, some boarding houses had sprung up around the shrine, and families had mentally ill members had kind of dumped their family members in there and were paying a stipend to the people that ran these boarding houses, and then they disappeared. And the people that ran these boarding houses had chained the people. So the people who were chained died in the fire. So understandably, the government was under a lot of pressure to kind of overhaul the mental health system in India, which they've been trying to do. But one of the things that they did was they tried to bring a lot of these popular healing shrines underneath the Mental Health Act, and directed the shrine trustees and priests to identify, you know, severely mentally ill people and set up processes to put them in, we'll give them proper psychiatric care, so either install a psychiatrist at the temple who visited, or set up some sort of clinics or pathways to direct these people into clinics. So there's been an interesting reaction to this, of course. So, you know, a lot of people who stridently support people's rights to, you know, undertake faith healing at these sorts of shrines have been a little bit up in arms. But interestingly, most states have actually ignored these government directives altogether. But Tamil Nadu is one of the few states that has done something. So there's some NGOs doing work. So they'll go to temples and meet with people and then offer them mental health services if they think they need them. And or another temple down in the south has installed a little clinic where a psychiatrist visits a couple of times a week. So I'm looking at the impact on women who go to these shrines. So it's an ethnographic approach. I mean, one thing that interests me about is that, you know, Oroville has been, you know, really ahead of many other places in India in terms of the healing that's on offer here and the health services. And so it's very interesting going into these other parts of India and seeing how health and mental illness is dealt with, especially when you see some of the things that are going on that look like they're a real invasion of people's human rights. But to see here, for example, there's a new health centre that has been started up in, a healing centre started up in Ediyan Chavadi village by someone within Oroville, and so many different healing paradigms. So it's very interesting to see some of this, and also see how that might feed into, yeah, healing practices outside in India. And what's interesting is, you know, there's apparently, you know, a massive amount of drugs for depression, but very little for schizophrenia. And apparently this is because pharmaceutical companies see a lot of money to be made out of drugs for depression, whereas the rate of schizophrenia is much lower than depression, so they won't make the same sort of money, so they don't invest the same sort of money in looking at drugs for schizophrenic people. But I think the awareness in India is slowly increasing, slowly coming along, especially now as the acceptance of mental illness has really gone quite mainstream in many Western countries, but there's still stigma in the West too. So, of course, there's going to be even greater stigma here. And one of the things my research is looking at actually is what's called Dawa Dua models, which means medicine and prayer. So people may encounter a psychiatrist at the temple and they may accept a prescription for medicine that may relieve the acute phase, but they're still not discouraged from continuing with their devotional aspects of their healing. And so they incorporate that. And so the best models of that are going on in these shrines are models that respect people's right to continue to worship and to continue these traditional practices. It may be, you know, a trance, going into a trance, a spirit trance or an exorcism at a temple, so that you still respect the traditional beliefs around this. But you're trying to, you know, try all approaches. And in fact, a very pluralistic approach to healing has always been the mode in India. People have pretty much always combined Ayurveda, you know, Unani healing methods, and they may go to an allopathic doctor, but usually after a while they can't afford allopathic drugs. So they, you know, usually continue with the other forms of healing because they're cheaper. But they will try most things, try them all together, yeah.
Not a bad way to go.
That's right. I mean, if you think about it, in the West, that's also what many people do. You know, they may go to have acupuncture and they may, you know, see a doctor as well, you know, have a tarot reading or something like that, to, you know, or some sort of energetic healing. So, yeah, it's not really that different. But one thing that I've noticed, and it may just be that, you know, I have some friends in the village, young Tamil people, and I'm really noticing a sort of a different sort of engagement from young Tamil people with Auroville, who bring a different sort of energy, you know, who are very inspired by Auroville and a little bit sick of how things are done in the village. And they sort of seem to be challenging some of the village elders too, who have traditionally held the power, but these village elders aren't necessarily very educated people, and some of the young men don't agree with how the village elders are going about, you know, making decisions about Auroville, how they will interact with Auroville, and some of these young people are sort of demanding that they be included in these sorts of decision making, or challenging the elders. So this is very interesting that I've noticed that, and I've noticed really escalating rate of young people in the villages taking up educational opportunities, some of which are offered by Auroville, and some of them are just creating their own, for example, going to college in Pondicherry. I do know of some village people nearby Auroville who managed to kind of get to university through Auroville, through help from Auroville, and they have now collaborated with someone in Auroville and they've set up a fund themselves to help other village people who are very poor, who can't afford to go to college, and so they'll be trying to gather donations from guests and Aurovillians to send other people to college. So that's really lovely to see that they've had the benefit and they acknowledge that and they want to help other people in the village. So that's some of the things I've noticed, but otherwise I'm looking forward to the guest season and, you know, the influx of people and activities. But that's about all I can think of for now.
Saturday, that's tomorrow, December 4th, at Savitri Bhavan, 5 p.m., another talk with George van Freckham called Sri Aurobindo's Descent into Death. In the years immediately after the Second World War, the situation had become, in Sri Aurobindo's words, worse than worse. In fact, his work was in jeopardy as well as the mother's, and it was not his intention to give his sanction to another fiasco. This is one of the most dramatic episodes in spiritual history and the history of humankind, documented hour by hour and commented upon by the mother herself. Sri Aurobindo's voluntary descent into death made possible, only 6 years later, the manifestation of the supermind with its enormous future consequences. That's tomorrow, 5 p.m. at Savitri Bhavan. Here's an early call to help in the organizing in any way for an Eco Music Festival to be held on 29th January at Solitude Farm. That is, set up, media, organization, running a stall, etc. Please come to a first meeting on Friday, 10th December at Solitude Farm, 4:30 p.m. It will be a one-day event with participation from all the eco-based projects in Auroville, plus bands from Auroville and Chennai, and other activities such as drama and handicrafts. There will be workshops in permaculture and cooking and eco-building. With wealth comes carbon responsibility. If most of your money goes on travel or home energy, that puts you at the most carbon-intensive end of the scale. If you invest your cash in forests and wind farms, then you're at the opposite extreme, using your wealth to bring about a lower carbon world. However, if you stick your money under the mattress, it's doing neither harm nor good. This from Sri Aurobindo, one of his thoughts and aphorisms. I should love my neighbor not because he's my neighbor, for what's there in neighborhood and distance, nor because religions tell me he is my brother, for where's the root of brotherhood, but because he is myself. Neighborhood and distance affect the body. The heart goes beyond them. Brotherhood is of blood or country or religion or humanity, but when self-interest clamors, what becomes of this brotherhood? It's only by living in God and turning mind and heart and body into the image of His universal unity that that deep, disinterested, and unassailable love becomes possible. You've been listening to Oroville Radio with Marlenka on microphone. In studio, Miriam, Yahlom, and Andrea. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to contact oroville radio.org. Thanks for listening.